Jema. So we continue the series on Bhagavad Puran. And though originally it was meant to be just to take some stories and interpret them, but that will be actually to do injustice. Thank you. Jema. So we are with Bhagavad Puran, and originally this idea that had come was basically to take up some stories and their meaning, the symbolic stories and their meaning. But the Bhagavad Puran is not only a very important, interesting scripture. Sri Aurobindo has appreciated, both Mother and Sri Aurobindo. There are places where Sri Aurobindo has translated the first part of Bhagavad Puran, and it relates to the life of Sri Krishna, which is, you know, we can say that, as Sri Aurobindo said, he is my double. So both of them have such a deep, intimate relation. But because there are many things which we discover, which are there in the Bhagavad Puran, which are also there in Sri Aurobindo's writings, though they are mentioned in a different way. For example, one of the things which we find in Bhagavad Puran is that how many earths are there. So what I am saying is, because these Puranas have these three sides. One is the spiritual. So spiritual is profound spiritual truths, which we have been speaking about, the dharma and the story of the bull and the cow. So there are very profound spiritual ideas, which are largely given in the form of symbolic stories. Then there are many occult truths about, by occult is meant hidden things, which we normally, ordinarily, with our senses don't understand, don't perceive. And then there are, of course, there is a storyline which is about the physical and which we have to correlate with the story. Up till now, what we are really speaking of, we have not yet entered the story of Sri Krishna, because that's how normally people understand that Bhagavad Puran is about story of Krishna. We have not yet spoken about Krishna's Janam and Krishna Avatar. So we need to understand that we are still in the earth has not yet formed. Now this is very interesting, because many people who think that only material world is the only reality, well, then Puranic lore will sound mythological, and in that case anything spiritual has no meaning, because unless we are to follow that kind of paradigm that there is only the material world and the spiritual world. The problem with that paradigm is that there has to be some kind of a link. How is the spiritual world connected to the material world? Is there a link or no? So one is that there is a material world with all the issues and difficulties and challenges which we perceive with the senses. And there is the spiritual world which we have to, probably through the road of religion or some means, we have to find and go there. Or perhaps, as some would say, that, well, it's all in the imagination. Because what is the link at all, if there is a link? But the Bhagavad says there is a link, so much so that even human personality derives itself from the truth of divine personality. So as we said, there is the Purusha, and human beings are made in the image of that Purusha. That's why when human form is created, so we have story in the one of the Upanishads that all the gods were happy, that here is a form in which we can enter. And we see that the Virat Purusha is described in this Upanishad, in the Vedas. Many things are here which are directly there in the Vedas. And it's about that there is a yajna, and the Purusha appears, and he has from his feet emerge Shudras, from his thighs and abdomen emerge Vaishyas, from his chest and arms emerge Kshatriya, and from his head emerge Brahmins. So obviously what is being spoken of is not about caste system, not about things they have practiced here, but knowledge, power. Mother speaks of it then. Love and interchange, cosmic interchange, which binds all creation. And of course, works and service. And Sri Aurobindo speaks of it in the Mother, all the four great aspects of the Divine Mother. And it's an evolutionary process. One starts one's life from the physical and reaches that point where one is a seeker of knowledge. And then one goes beyond. Then it's not like this is the ultimate truth is the truth of Brahman. No, the seeker of knowledge has to enter into knowledge. When he enters into knowledge, then there is a different consciousness altogether. So this is what we see is being described in this Puranic literature. So how does it all begin? There is a very beautiful description. And the description comes after the story of, just in nutshell, the story of Varavatar is passingly mentioned, which we spoke of last time. So people who refer to the story of Varavatar, so they actually imagine, it's shown in the movie, that there is a God takes the form of Vara and he rescues Earth from, which has sunk into the ocean. But if you go through the story, it's very clear the Vara is not at all that point of time an earthly creature, because he's shown as a huge boar in the sky. And every time he's moving or doing some activity, it raises all kinds of sparks, and the celestial beings are watching it with, they bow down. The Vara speaks in a godlike language. He is none else but Vishnu himself. So he speaks, he communicates. And the two asuras who are there, they are also, so it's before the earth is born, we must understand. So Puranic lore goes into that landscape before the earth has emerged. So there are several stages through which earth emerges. And it's understandable because if you have to connect the earth to the sky, let us say, this has been an effort which... So straight away you cannot imagine even physically that suddenly one day a person woke up and say, oh, we can make engines and we have petrol, let's try to climb to the skies and have a spacecraft. It's silly. So what do? We first have wheels which can, there is motion. And then you have a scooter, you have a motor car, and then you have slowly the steamers, and then you have, helicopters, then aircraft, then you have spacecraft. So same thing is described when we see the evolutionary process of the universe which connects this earth. Earth comes later. Even below the earth, it starts from there and it goes right into the ultimate reality. And it's very, very fascinating actually. So we'll not go into great detail, but for example, in the Bhagavad Puran, there is a description of how Srishti, this creation, comes into being. So the first Srishti that is created by Brahmaji, so how does he create? He creates a body, and in the body there is Srishti, and the Srishti is of these beings who are very hungry. So there are Rakshasas. So these Rakshasas are very hungry. And you see, there is in Upanishad, this is described in a very interesting way. It says, hunger, that is death. And in Jainism, they have understood it at what level, that they say, if you master your hunger, you can master creation. That's why, all the fast and all this comes from prayopavasa, that hunger is the real problem. Now, this is not about food, grain or other things. Hunger, and if you really see that hunger itself, how many tons of matter we swallow as human beings, forget about others. Tons. When I was studying in school, I was just once calculating. And I said, my God, what is this place? And it's filled with tons and tons and tons of food of different kinds. And it is an empty space. It's a strange organ. From the mouth to the anus, there is everything is around it, and it is happening inside this tunnel, if you want to call it. It's an amazing. So, anyways, we'll not go into this. So, there cannot be directly the consciousness has plunged into the inconscient, and from there it has to emerge. So, before that, it takes the form of a cosmic egg, and the first command is tapa. Now, what is tapa? Tapa is any energy, if you concentrate, it becomes the energy of tapa. Tapa literally means energizing, concentrating of consciousness. Same thing if you concentrate in a small vessel, same amount of water. If you put it, compress it in some way. So it increases, like that's the whole idea of steam when you cover the pressure cooker. So, it wants to escape. So it's the same amount of liquid. You compress it and compress it. It becomes very powerful. Its energy tends to increase. Even compressed light, compressed sound. So like a zip file. See, the whole creation is compressed. compressed where? Into the inconscient. From there it has to emerge. Now, because Bhagavad Puran is not mentioning how the involution takes place here, so I'll not touch it. It's there in Sri Aurobindo's writings. But from there, if it has to emerge, it will emerge slowly, step by step. Like a baby cannot straight away learn about E equals to MC square. He must learn A, B, C, D, E. That's how he'll learn. So the first creation which Brahmaji brings about, that is now we are into Bhagavat, is the extremely tamoguni prakriti. Tamoguni creation. So if you read it, you say, why did he create? Now that's where the missing link comes. Why did he create? And tamoguni is, everybody is hungry. The rakshasas, they are hungry. The asuras, they are hungry. Asuras come a little later. They are all hungry beings. And what do? Because they don't know what to eat. So they are rushing after Brahmaji. We want to eat you, we want to eat you. See, it's in form of a story. So Brahmaji goes to Narayan that you gave me the command to create. You are the being who emerges out of the cosmic water. So initially, there is just cosmic water in which there is tapa. The energy is concentrating itself. What that energy is, nobody can say. And then it takes a form. The form is of Narayana. The being who is stretched all into this creation. And he's on the cosmic waters. Out of the water, creation emerges. Doesn't something happen even in human birth? Doesn't it happen even in the egg? There is water. Out of water things are formed. The same pattern follows everywhere. And then there is the emergence. Same process. So out of the cosmic egg, which is floating. We don't know where it is floating. But out of that cosmic egg, Narayan emerges. So Narayan is the one from whose navel Brahmaji comes. And Sri Aurobindo has confirmed. He said this image is a truth. This is not just an image. It's not a symbol. Even there is description. If you read Pursuit of the Unknowable, you will see a description of, you will identify with Vishnuji in his, not swimming on the serpent couch, but you will see that, on eagles, pusa wings, you can almost get the impression of the Garuda if you are exposed to this Purana. And he's there. And he gives the command to create. So out of him emerges, out of the Rajogun, the power to create emerges as Brahmaji. So Brahmaji is not the originator. Very interesting. It is Narayana who gives the command to create. So out of the Rajogun which is in him, it comes out in the form of a lotus. And on the lotus, Brahmaji comes and he starts creating. So what does he create? He first starts creating. He creates a tamoguni world. And this world is full of hunger. The sign of tamas. It just eats, devours. And where does all the devouring go? So one of the signs, as an aside, which I say that Satyuga is coming, is that if you compare today's children with our grandparents, you see the amount of food and diet that has there. Of course, there are many food plazas which have opened. But the diet has come down drastically. There was a time when parents used to be very worried about it. My child doesn't eat. I have gone through that phase when even a lot of parents would come and ask me in the Air Force, "Bacha khata nahi hai." And when I would listen to the diet, I said, "This is fine." He said, no, we used to, our parents used to eat so much. I said, "Yes, my mama also could eat 50 puris without a problem. But today's children cannot eat." Now, because it's a change which is coming. But that's a different story. So in the beginning, there is hunger. Inconscient is hunger. It takes everything, swallows everything. That's how death comes. And why this is created? Because there has to be like a huge empty vessel where what is the foresight? So when you can't keep on creating, you have to have destruction because to keep a balance. So whatever is destroyed, where will it go? So it goes back into that hunger. So there is a description in Savitri about death that, O eater of the remnants of the sun. That's how death is described. So there is this from which Tamoguni, and then Brahmaji goes, where do I go? So he goes to Narayan. So Narayan explains to him the process. So what is the process? He discards his Tamoguni Deh. So he leaves that body. He takes another body. Out of that other body come Devas. You see, this is how the creation, the asuras are regarded as the elder brothers. That's why they don't give easily this world. It's there in the Purana. Asuras are the elder brother. Why they are elder brother? Because you can't have from utter inconscient, you cannot suddenly have the luminous beings. So out, the sequence is very interesting. So in this comes, in Brahmaji's, in Bhagavad Puran, how the creation starts is, there are beings who are like asuras, rakshasas, they want to swallow. Then Brahmaji discards that body. And then he goes on to create the devas. So devas are the second line. There is a very nice article of Nalnida on this. The devas are the second line. We are not talking of the four original emanations. We'll come to that little later. That Sachidanandini is for respect. Now when the devas come, there is no... It's like you have the feet and you have the head. So what Brahmaji does, he leaves that aside and he, out of him, from his thighs and belly, something else happens. There emerges a creation which is full of desires. So the word is kama. And all of them want, they are full of want. Kama is created. It will be the driving power. It will connect the absolutely dark creation which is full of tamas, desire awakes. So they are full of kama. And to satisfy them, Brahmaji has to do something, you know, because he is the one who has created. Now see the beauty. Everything is coming from the one divine and an evolutionary hierarchy is forming. So Brahmaji creates a most amazing feminine form. So that's what we see also in the other story of the Puranas. We'll come to that, where that feminine form is so attractive. If you read the description, you will identify some of these feminine forms even today. That's how it describes. He describes their dress, he describes their form, their hav-bhav, and all these asuras and rakshasas run after her. So they say, okay, we have got something to feel happy about. And then Brahmaji discards that body also. So then he goes on to create the body of the Siddhas. And then that body is very beautiful, everything. And then at the end of creating all this, he has to create Earth. So Earth comes much later on the scene. It's very fascinating. And it's a subject worth, you know, if there is a scientific mind, I have myself written about all this, but in a more scientific language, then you will see how before the physical matter is formed, this is only the material Earth. There are seven immortal earths Sri Aurobindo speaks of in Savitri. And the Bhagavad Puran speaks of seven bhumis. But how it describes the seven earths? It says that at the center is Jambudvip. This led to a lot of confusion. Then there are the Saptadvipaha. So people say that they are the seven, continents. And they wonder how they knew. The seven continents are created on the basis of the original is somewhere else. Original is the seven planes of consciousness. There are seven oceans and seven bhumis. Bhumis is here, the stable ground. And on that basis, because earth contains all of them together, that's how the beauty of the earth. So you have the seven continents, and if you really look closely at these continents, now that's a big subject, I'm not going into it. So you see, each continent is representing something. Now that's a different subject. Bhagavad doesn't talk about it, so let's come back to Bhagavad. But I can't resist the temptation, it's so fascinating. So at the end, Brahmaji is creating. So the problem is that you have only creation. You have no death. Problem. How many he can create? As many planes. So he goes and consults Narayan. What do I do? So Narayan says, you create. Now is the time to create the Maithuni Srishti. See, up till now he is creating. There is no sexual reproduction. See, this is not about physical earth which is being spoken of. So there are two kinds of Srishti. One where it is like Swayambhu Manu. So they are just creating. Now comes Maithuni Srishti. With Maithuni Srishti comes death. That's how, if you read one of the mother's writings, she speaks about sexual. Each sexual act is a step towards death. Now people may say, that, oh, this is a moral teaching. No, see the interesting part. I have actually been involved with a study of this kind, and we had presented in All India Institute of Medical Sciences. So it's not just hocus pocus, okay? So if you observe the period for which a specie lives, you will see that it is inversely proportional to its capacity to reproduce. Rabbits produce rapidly. Rabbits die very early. And you will see that the specie dies after it has... There is nothing like menopause. There is no menopause. It creates, reproduces. The moment the reproductive capacity finishes, it dies. Many such fascinating things about creation, which if we study, we'll see the logic here. So it's a creation which is besieged by death. So there is creation, there is destruction, death. So there is a balance which is being created. But that's not the goal of creation. So at the end comes man. So there, each creation, there will be someone like a mind which is trying to precipitate into a human form. Now we don't know whether it actually precipitates into a human form or not. Probably it does. And that is the Manu. So Manu is the first human progenitor. Before that, plenty of things have happened. But they are not Maithuni Srishti. There is no sexual process involved. Even on earth, because you will see the symbol on earth of everything. So there is amoeba, virus, bacteria. They don't reproduce. They just multiply. And when creation enters into the supramental, there will be no reproduction. You can multiply, because that is the original truth. So anyways, very fascinating. I am preventing myself from slipping from the Bhagavad into. So at the end, he creates Manu. Now, how does he create? Now, we have story of Adam and Eve, where we all know that God created Adam, and Adam wanted a partner. So out of his rib came Eve. Now, in India, the story has a twist. So he created Manu from his right side and Shatrupa from the left side. You see, it's very interesting. Both are equal. The right and the left, they have different approaches. They are the same truth, but they are two different approaches. So Manu is more oriented with the mind, and Shatrupa, she can take many, many forms. Shatrupa. So we have spoken about the Manu Shatrupa story passingly. I'll speak about it when we come to the correct place in the Bhagavad. So he creates Manu and he creates Shatrupa. And then each of them starts having children, and then these children multiply. So now Bhagavad zeroes in on this particular creation. Even this creation we don't know, it doesn't mention. It just says that there are 14 Manus. Each Manu is meant for a Manvantara. Manvantara word comes from Manu. One type of mental being which will work in one Manvantara. So very fascinatingly, it connects with what Mother and Sri Aurobindo have always said. This is the seventh creation. What does the Bhagavad Purana say? This is the seventh creation. What happened to the sixth creation? They all were under pralaya. So we don't know what happened, how the process took place. But something happened and there was pralaya. Why there was pralaya? Because creation is trying to reach a point, but it's not able to reach a point. So it collapses, goes into the belly of the divine. We'll talk about that when it comes to Krishna's birth. It's very fascinating. I, because of being aware of these stories, I sometimes tend to want to jump, but let's keep the suspense. What happens during pralaya and how does it re-emerge, we'll hold, because that's not there right now. So right now it's about that ultimately all the Manus come. So first Manu is Swambhu Manu. Why? Because there is no process. So he is born of himself. So he is a Swambhu Manu brought out from the right side of Brahmaji, and from the left side comes Shatrupa. And now they have to start mating and start creating. So they don't know what to do. So whom will they go? So they go to Brahmaji. They say, tell us what we have to do. So Brahmaji says that, well, I'll explain to you the process. This is how you have to go. And the first Manu and his wife Shatrupa, they have a daughter. So the daughter is Devahuti. So there are other daughters also, but Devahuti. So it's literally, you know, there's something which has been offered to the Lord and that energy comes. So it's very interestingly described, the whole process. But where will be the man to marry her? So they have actually 9 daughters. So 9 daughters, how will they find? So they go again. You have created a Maithuni Srishti. Where will be the corresponding men? So he says, wait, hold on. So Brahmaji from his mind creates 9, male partners. So you have the famous Rishis, Marij, all these, there are 9 names. And out of them, there is one who is given this charge of creating the Srishti. So he is Kardam Rishi. So Kardam Rishi now, because these Marich and all, they are now guides. So now you see the process right now, not yet the full earthly portion has started. But now beginning, first scene, it's like the characters are getting in the makeup room. So Kardam Rishi divides, very clearly the story is very symbolic, divides himself into 9 parts. 50 years back, we would have said this is mumbo jumbo. With cloning. In fact, it says he divides his seed into 9 parts. And that is how it impregnates. That's the process which starts. Not yet, full sexual process not started. And then Devahuti gives birth to the first, what we can call as a child, which is born through a sexual reproduction. Who can come through it? But the Lord himself. So the first avatar of Vishnu, according to that human form, is Kapil Muni. So Kapil Muni comes as a result of the joining of Kardam Rishi with Devahuti. But this is a very interesting description. Devahuti comes and she wants to marry Kardam Rishi. Kardam Rishi says, yes, I have got the command to create. But see, I am by temperament, I am not a worldly fellow. So I will be with you when child or children, whatever is created, I will go back. So she says, okay, that time she doesn't realize what it means to, you know, when he will go away. She says, oh, that's a far off thing. Probably he'll go and join some ashram and all. It's okay. So she says, right now everything is fine. So Kardam Rishi creates. Now see the story. Even if you take the most conservative estimate of the Bhagavad Purana, even if you take 2000 years, okay, it describes that Kardam Rishi gets a Viman. He builds a Viman, aircraft. And this aircraft will be driven by mind, because he is the mental child of Brahmaji. Sounds very strange. If you read Bharadwaj's Vimana Shastra, I have read the book. Means I have read portions of it. It describes 4 types of Vimana. So the last type is where you are driven by the petrol and all, whatever, you know, earthly fuel. Then there is another which is driven by the solar fuel. There is another which is driven by the power of the mind. Literally, the mind will think. You need, obviously, a great mastery is required for the pilot. Now we are actually working on it, and it won't be surprising another 20 years at least we have mind-driven, thought-driven vehicles. The interface is ready. So we can imagine what correspondence comes. So he creates a Viman which by his thought can go around the world. So where does he take his wife? Devahuti, come, we'll go. And every description is so fascinating. So in the Viman, there are replicas of various, like Mayur, peacock, and lovely birds, which are so real that all these creatures start coming near. They are not earthly beings. They are still, these creatures exist in the vital world. One may say, how? Haven't seen them in dreams? You see these creatures in dreams. So these, it's not like the mind is throwing images. They exist in their own right. So suddenly, anyway, that's a different subject. So they come near, they are making nice sound. What a description. You'll feel, oh my God, this is so gorgeous. Ideal setting. It's the, we can literally say the first honeymoon. Literally honeymoon, because one of the srishti was on Chandrama. Brahmaji has made one of the srishtis on Chandrama. So anyways, so all of them are, I am not going into these details because each is fascinating. If somebody has a question and asks, I'll be happy to reply. What is meant by srishti on the Chandrama? For example, mother has said the moon had civilization once, it grew cold. And many of these moonlings literally came to earth. And she identifies them with the Chinese. So anyways, that's a different story altogether. So they go around and for, again, it's not yet earthly time, 1,000 years. 1,000 years Kardam Rishi has done tapasya, by the way. Obviously, it's not a human life which is being talked about. He is the mental child of Brahma. And then for hundreds of years, I don't remember how many years, they are together. And out of Devahuti, different feminines come. And then there is one son which comes. And that is none else but Lord Vishnu himself takes the form of Kapil Muni. So then Kardam Rishi says, see, my job is over. Please excuse me. I am going. So now she realizes what it means. The loss of suddenly a man who has been with her. So she says, I am going to miss you. Well, the Bhagavad doesn't say I'm going to miss you. But Bhagavad says she is deeply moved. She feels sad. So that's because moha is born. For earth you need moha. So moha, which is in the first srishti, moha comes in among. And then moha enters into the human form. So what do you do for moha? So he says, your son will be redeeming you. I have to go. So she brings up, who is the son, Kapil Muni. And when he comes of age, he gives her a very nice discourse. Amazing. As I said, every bit, if we go, it'll take years to complete. It's through the mouth of Maitreyi, who is explaining all this to Vidur. And this dialogue is being spoken of by Sutji and Shonakji about an event which has taken place in before human time. So we can imagine how they are connected. So Kapil Muni explains to her that how this creation has come into being. What are the, what is Prakriti, what is Purusha, and how the light of intelligence of the Purusha activates the Prakriti. And if the Purusha withdraws, now here Purusha is not about man, for God's sake. It is the witness consciousness. By being a witness, it can take back everything of Prakriti. It can discard everything of Prakriti and become free. It discovers itself. So basically it means the same consciousness. When it is involved in creation, then you have all this activity, this world, and this all the Jagat Sansar. The same consciousness, because Purusha holds consciousness. According to Kapil Muni, Sankhya Darshan, he is the one who gave. And Sankhya Darshan till date has its own validity. We may agree to everything or may not agree, that's a different story. But it is the consciousness aspect belongs to the self. And when you withdraw that, when if the consciousness is engaged with the world, then you are bound. There is no real bondage. It's your, you have chosen. There is a very beautiful line in Sri Aurobindo's writing. None is bound, none is free, none seeking to be free. It's from Ashtavakra Gita actually, it also says. The same consciousness you turn away, you are free. You don't have to go to jungle or anything. You have to turn away. And we all know, isn't it? When we are very much in distress because somebody has hurt us. What happens? Consciousness turned first away. Then what do? We may go into depression. That's a sad story. So the consciousness gets involved into the ego self. But the same consciousness can get turned towards something beautiful, high, deep, and you're free. Same thing. And if you see this way, then sad events are much better. They are an opportunity for consciousness to discover its own origin. Otherwise, one is involved all the time. World Wide Web, original World Wide Web. So Devahuti realizes that, you know, she is after the jnana, then she engages in tapasya. And all the gods and all the beings, they come near her. She is full of, there are minute descriptions. For example, she is not eating, but her body, the flesh is becoming less and less, but her body is releasing tremendous energy. Because that energy of tapasya is radiating through the body. So these are subtle details. Shobindu speaks about it when he did experiment of not eating for 21 days. And all this is part of the occult. As I said, all the three are coming together. So Devahuti finally, the time comes when she withdraws. It's a whole process of how one should really leave the body. In Jainism, this method is known. And it's called Prayopavasa, which people misunderstand. So Prayopavasa is you give up eating. I have seen people here. I have seen at least one person who had given up eating. So I had come here and everybody was forcing him. So, you know, I asked him, are you trying to withdraw? He said, yes, nobody is understanding this. I said, okay, hold on. So I said, this is a known, and Sri Aurobindo has mentioned about it, that certain people do it. Now, of course, in our yoga, we don't do that. But that's why you see, now you connect why at the end, toward the later part, mother is there. Pranabdha is giving her, mother, you must drink something. And she takes, because that's your contact with earthly life. Otherwise, there is no other contact. So, hunger, that is death. All these threats connect together. So, she gives up food. It was a recognized way of withdrawing. But not like you give up food and do anshan. Gandhiji misused it. It is meant to concentrate inside. And if you can do it, it's a way, one of the recognized way to leave. Not in this yoga, but I have seen some people leave like that. Yes, there is a technical term to it. So, first person who does it is Devahuti. And Kapil Muni has given the jnana and then he turns away and goes. He is regarded as one of the Vishnu avatars in the Bhagavad. Now, this is the background story. What happens now to the story of the Varaha avatar? So, suddenly this story comes because you have to connect it. So, then Bhagavad describes about the Varaha avatar very beautifully. So, it says that, well, Lord Vishnu is in his Vaikuntha. By the way, what is Vaikuntha? If you go to the meaning, there are different meanings that different Sanskrit people will say. But one of the simple meaning is kuntha is that which is, kuntha we all know, no? Holding on, grudges and all this. In Vaikuntha, there is no kuntha, it transcends. So you cannot hold grudges and anger and frustration there. By the nature, it should not be there. And if you develop it, you will be outcast. This is very interesting part. So in Vaikuntha, there are these two beings, Jay and Vijay. They are the watchmen. The, you know, when we go to ashram, no, at the gate, somebody is there to tell us, come in, don't come in, etc. So Jay and Vijay are the original Parshad. No, I have no hidden meanings. Okay. They are the original gatekeepers of Lord Vishnu. But as it happens, when you are very close to the divine, you may develop some kind of feeling of superiority. Superiority is bad. Huh? If you are in ordinary life, somebody will hit you. If nobody else, your own son will do that. If your son doesn't do, daughter-in-law will definitely do it. No. So, in Vaikuntha, anyways, so, if you go to a place like ashram, it becomes very difficult. Because everybody come and give respect. No, everybody coming, everyone. Like it happens, no, when we come, everyone seems divine. If he scolds, you just become okay, okay, okay. But you're not supposed to have that state. And that is what this story says. They are supposed to be, If you are in the service of the divine, be much more humble than what you are outside. So this story is a perfect demonstration of that. So this Sanat Kumar, Sanakadik, so they are the four, some would say five. They are babies and always full of light. So they are crossing one threshold after another to meet their Vishnu Bhagwan, Sri Hari. And these people wondering how they are going. They are not even bothered to ask me. Wait. Line me out. Who are you? Show me the gate pass. They are just going inside. They put a stick. Now this is too much. When they put a stick, Sanat Kumar says, you are dwelling here in the abode of Lord Narayana. You should be full of love, full of humility, full of peace. And here you are having doubt, fears. Go to the worlds of fear and doubt. Now they realized what has happened. Because Lord Vishnu comes. So see the humility. The moment he hears, he comes and he does pranam to them. Everywhere you will see this beautiful thing about Lord Vishnu. He is very humble. There is another story which we must have. Who was this? Bhrigu Rishi. He wants to know ki who is the greatest. So he goes to Brahmaji and takes some test. And Brahmaji frowns. He goes away. Then he goes to Shiva. And Shiva, after a while, he says, how dare Shiva is Shiva. Then he goes to Brahmaji. And he stopped. So he, because Brahmaji is in his sleep. So he puts his feet on Brahmaji's chest and literally hits him. Brahmaji wakes up and says, oh, I'm so sorry you came. I didn't know you are here. It's a very touching story. And if you go to the ancient Vaishnava cult, you will see even on Ramji, who is a Vigraha of Vishnu or Vishnu Bhagwan, you will see there is a foot mark which is here. Because he took that. That is the foot mark of Bhrigu Rishi. He doesn't get angry. He says, oh Rishikan, you have come. I am so sorry. I was sleeping. You tell me, ask what you want. He says, no. I was testing. Now I know that you are the greatest. Now, leaving aside the issue of Puranas and who is the greatest. But Vishnu Bhagwan comes. And he is so full of humility. See, when you read here, people don't understand. I am just taking a little aside. Many people, when they see the human beings, they just wonder, what is this yoga? People are becoming like this, that. Rishabh Chandji once said, mother, if people come here and see you, they will never want to go away. But if people come and see us, they would never want to stay. If you read the stories of how Mother and Shurbindo, just to tell you one story, initially there was no samadhi, no, it was a place where children were here, 14-year-old, 15-year-old. What were they doing? Any idea? Playing what? What were they playing here and what were they playing in the now meditation room where Mother's final darshan? Ringa, ringa, roses. Only one day the mother comes down. What does she say? You know, if you make too much sound, Pavitra is not well. So, Pavitra Da is not saying anything. She is coming for another child. So, it's like, okay, you can play, but... So, there are so many stories. When you read that, and then you wonder, slowly how, you know, religions get formed, people become very strict, they think they are having power. Actually, the sign of power is humility. Because you realize, oh my God, it is infinite. So, you become humble. By its nature, power makes you humble. If you are open to the infinite power, you become humble. So Vishnu Bhagwan says, I'm sorry, you have to go because you had once spoken like this about Lakshmi also. But Lakshmi ji is all love. She didn't say anything. Now start the story that they fall. Now they are given a choice. Choice is how many births you want to take to come back. They say quickest possible. So he says option one, 3 lives. Option 2, 7 lives. 3 lives, enmity of the Lord. You can't escape. Lord will take you. any which way. Seven lives, fullness, perfection. So it's called as, there are different names for this in the Bhagavad Puran. One is Dhumrapat and other is Aranya. They are different names. So also called as the Uttarayan, the Dakshinayan, we have spoken about it. So this is where the story comes of the Uttarayan, the northern path and the southern path. So they take the path of gravitation, because when they you fall, you will fall freely, touch rock bottom, and Lord will be compelled to take you and remove you. But it's like denuded going back. It's not fulfilling. We have spoken about this earlier. So Jai Vijay choose the path of will fall down. So when they fall down, the first two asuras, the Adi Asur, are born of Diti and they are Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashyapu. So that story again, there is something very interesting. Diti wants to have a child and she goes to Kashyap Rishi. She says, I want to have. She is again Prajapati, Daksha, and all this still happening on the subtle plane. Story is not about earth. Earth has not yet come into being. So Diti, Aditi are stories not about earth. They are of other planes. So they are all powers. Now problem is when we have to show it on ZTV or any TV, we show a woman wearing a nice dress and all that. It's okay. So Diti is division. Daityas, powers of division, their action is to divide. Wherever human beings divide, Daityas are active. Aditi, undivided, infinite consciousness is Aditi. So Diti and Aditi, they are both sisters. They are both married to Rishi Kashyap. So imagine what his life would have been. But well, it's about the human beings that, you know, we are married part to the divided consciousness from where dark energies are released, and we are also married, at least those who do the take to yoga, also to the infinite consciousness. So Kashyap Rishi has both of them, and Diti one day says, I want to have a child. Oh, that time, it's evening. So in India, there are two times which are regarded as sacred. And mother has spoken about it, ki they are very good for meditation. So one is early morning, before the outbreak. And the second is when these meeting twilights. So you see in Savitri also you have the two twilights. So this is the twilight when night is changing into day, and the other when evening is melting into night. So twilight zone is a zone when there is, it's like change of guard. So there is peace. There is peace in the atmosphere. So that moment, Diti is seized by this idea. This is all, of course, part of the divine play. That I want a baby. So Kashyap Rishi says, this is not the time. Let me finish all my prayers, everything. At night we'll have a baby. She says, no, no. She becomes Kamatur. And she literally, and see the description. He says, he starts plucking at his dhoti. So the man cannot do tapasya. He says, okay, fine. I'll give a baby to you. I'll see the rest later. So he has samagam. That's what is the intercourse is called as. And then he takes a bath and starts doing sadhana. But now Diti realizes that I did a mistake. Because this is not the time. So in India, there is a thing about time. For everything, there is a time. Nothing is discarded or taboo. But there is a time and there is a place. So desh kal. That's what sattvic life is about. Time and place are important. You just can't do anything anywhere. And you know, when I first went to the US, I saw on Heathrow Airport a man and a woman kissing each other, lip kiss, and I was wondering, what? But then I remembered, you're not supposed to watch because police may start taking it as different. So, I mean, you're not used to, no? In India, we have this deshkal causality, you have all this is there inbuilt into us. So, but that is Diti, Diti ki santan. It doesn't bother about deshkal. So she feels bad about it. But because she is a mother, she loves the child. She doesn't want to abort the child. She has an option that she can go through abortion. In this situation, abortion is better, as we see in Vyas Rishi. He comes and says to Gandhari, it's all test tube babies. So he says that you abort these children, they are going to be very deadly and dangerous. But she doesn't abort. So in India, it was very clear. It was the consciousness which was important, not the action. So anyways, so she thinks, then she says, I don't want to abort. She goes to Kashyap Rishi and says, "This war, I know I have done something which I shouldn't have done. Your tapasya I have hampered, but now this has happened. What do I do?" So Kashyap Rishi says, ideally is if you abort. She says, no, I don't want to abort. Please bless the child. So he says, okay. He knows the Devi Prerna. So he says that, okay, I bless the child. But because you have felt remorse at something which you have realized that it shouldn't have happened, therefore, out of the two asuras you are going to give birth, the son of one of them will become a great bhakta. Who is the son? Prahlad. Hiranyakashyapu Prahlad. But Prahlad's story is later. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashyapu. And they do all kinds of things. They do tapasya, impossible. And then the Varavatar, which we spoke about. And then there is a very graphic description of the fight that takes place. I'm not reading it, but it's very amazing the way the fight is described. At one of the places, it seems that, you know, when he hits with this gada, Vara, who is none else but Vishnu, he almost like, you know, gets hurt partly. So all the gods say, why are you playing with him? Oh, he says, no, he is my fellow. See how the divine is looking at him. He knows he is the person whom he has to take back. So Vishnu Bhagavan says, don't worry. I'm playing with him. Let me play with him. So he starts telling him that, you know, why don't you fight? So he says, no, you pick up your gada, then I'll fight. So Vishnu says, good, point taken. So like that. So what he is doing, it's not just a casual conversation. It looks like that. Basically, he's preparing him for what is going to come. And then he reaches a peak point where now this asur, as mother says at one place, one of the ways that the divine implodes an asura is that he gives him. Sounds very strange, but she has explained this in agenda. So disciple says, why? Why would the divine allow him to bloat and bloat? He says, because he bursts. And then whatever was the essence, that goes back into the Lord. So Hiranyaksha gives a tough fight, and Vishnu Bhagwan plays around and fools around. And when all the gods, Brahmaji says, please don't do this, we are all getting tense. Please do something about it. So he says, okay. And then he takes Hiranyaksha in one blow, he is gone. What happens after that? Earth is born. All that is happening till now is all happening in the subtle planes. So earth comes out of the water where Hiranyaksha had all the asuras of other lokas. They are not Prithvi lok. Prithvi, things will come with Manu. Manu has not come into the picture. He comes a little later. And then he brings out the Prithvi. And then now life can begin on earth. So this is the entire cosmology. And I have said in very, very small nutshell. If you read it, it's very fascinating. There are in it many elements which are very scientific. You can connect it much more now. And one of the things, as I was saying, Vimana. People think that Pushpak Vimana is the only Vimana imagined or whatever in Ramayana. There is the mention of not one Vimana, many Vimanas in the Bhagavad, where in Vishnu Lok, which is Vaikuntha, there are many Vimanas in which many beings are going. So people will say, what does it mean? It means that before anything appears on earth, it appears in a subtle way, in subtle worlds. So one may say evidence, very simple. see the action we do. Before we do the action, somewhere it is brewing up inside. If we are very observant, we will see. And then we will say, ye to hona hi tha. And it's so fascinating because we can catch it before it manifests. So before anything happens on earth, see the aircraft, even on earth. People say that, well, Leonardo da Vinci conceived of an aircraft. We are talking of this Kali Yuga 300, we'll talk about the yoga subsequently. So there are the 300 or 400 years back, Da Vinci conceived an aircraft. He made drawings. I have gone actually to the museum and seen the amazing drawings he made of muscles and of the aircrafts. He did. He made it. But at that point of time, our civilization was not developed or whatever happened. That's the story of Da Vinci is very fascinating. He was one of Sri Aurobindo's earlier incarnations. So when does the aircraft come? Much, much later. Where is this aircraft going to go? It will go to time travel, today or tomorrow. Because that's how it is going to take place. And when we discover, and we are already imagining and conceiving it. So this is how we see that there is a, on the subtle world's creation forms, this is the take home point. Because very often people say, ye kahan ho raha hai? Earth pe nahi ho raha hai abhi. So why should we know it? Because that's the whole connecting link. Otherwise, earthly events seem so strange. So when Sri Aurobindo saw the Asura behind Hitler, he could see what is this original Asura. When Mother speaks of the four original Asuras, they are the four original aspects of the divine Sat, Chit, Tapas, Anand. They become the reverse. So they push human beings. And godlike beings push human beings. And those who consciously bring in the godlike energies are the ones who, like Dashrath and Ikshvaku, they participate in the Devasur Sangram from the side of the gods. So there are beings of earth. Because on earth this takes place. They are basically fighting for earth. Why? Because earth has all the different possibilities. Because after Brahmaji has created all these srishti, at the end he says, I must have a place where now Vishnu Bhagwan says, now you have the Maithuni Srishti. In Maithuni Srishti, there will be balance, there will be self-generating. Brahmaji doesn't have to create things after that. So this is where Maithuni Srishti begins. Earth comes, Manu comes. And just to say a little bit about, Manu has to ask how to create. We already spoke of that story. So Manu asks how to create. He goes to Rishi Kardam and asks, what are we supposed to do? So read a poem of Sri Aurobindo called The Rishi. In the poem, the entire earth is all snow. And Manu comes and asks the Rishi, Rishi of the pole, that's how he describes, what am I supposed to do? I have all this vast dominion. What do I do? So Rishi gives him that what you are supposed to do. And he says that fear not from living, fear not from love, and create, endure. And at the end you will discover from man the lover to God the goal. So the entire evolutionary process in that poem, the Rishi, is described. It's that dialogue which takes place between Manu. He asks his, like, what are we supposed to do? So that's how the creation begins. We'll continue this maybe next week. After that we'll have live divine classes. Jai Ma.